It's Sunday morning, and that wonderfully relaxed feeling of a long, lazy day lingers in the air. If you want to make the moment last, may I suggest the perfect solution? The Martin Sheen Podcast. Join me, your host, Martin Sheen, for beautifully crafted 20-minute programs filled with never-before-heard stories of my life, along with personal reflections and poetry that inspires. The Martin Sheen Podcast is the perfect Sunday refresh, a chance to take a deep breath, relax, and know that the stress of Monday may be just around the corner, but not here, not now. So make this your weekly moment of calm as we explore faith, hope, love, and what it means to be human. And know this, this journey is ever unfolding as I invite you to see what's next with me, Martin Sheen, and thank you.
MSW Media.
Spy Talk, a podcast at the intersection of intelligence, foreign policy, national security, and military operations.
Hi there, I'm Jeff Stein. This is Spy Talk. A lot of Spy Talk listeners are probably familiar with this theme from NCIS, the long, long-running TV drama featuring some very attractive military detectives in a fictional unit of the Navy's Criminal Investigative Service. Of course, these sleuths in khaki triumph over bureaucratic roadblocks, blind alleys, and evil geniuses to nail the bad guys most every week, making it the most-watched non-sports program on TV, according to the Nielsen ratings, drawing nearly 12 million viewers every week. My guest today, longtime Washington Post investigative reporter Craig Whitlock, draws a very different and troubling portrait of the NCIS in his new book, Fat Leonard, How One Man Bribed, Built, and Seduced the U.S. Navy. Now, if you know anything about Fat Leonard, it's how this basically uneducated but brilliant Malaysian con man, Leonard Francis, talked scores of U.S. Navy officers into giving him inside information on ship movements in the Pacific so he could get contracts for what's called ship husbanding. As Whitlock describes it, Leonard was a, quote, maritime fixer who provided harbor protection, barges, cranes, food, fresh water, sewage collection, and anything else a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier might need, unquote. It's absolutely astonishing how easily Leonard corrupted so many Navy officers by providing them with just prostitutes, booze, cash, and airline tickets. What if he'd been working for, say, Chinese intelligence? You'll definitely wonder after listening to my talk today with Whitlock, a three-time finalist for the Pulitzer Prize for his national security reporting. His 2021 investigative masterpiece, The Afghanistan Papers, A Secret History of the War, was a disturbing portrait of official deceit, skullduggery, and unaccountability during that long war. The same themes emerge with interest in Fat Leonard, How One Man Bribed, Built, and Seduced the U.S. Navy. Craig Whitlock, welcome back to Spy Talk. It's great to see you. Great to hear you. You've written a magnificent book, almost a thriller, Fat Leonard, I must say. I don't want to give away the ending, how we finally got this guy and then didn't got him and then got him again. And now there are hiccups in the prosecutions. So, but let's, what caught my eye, of course, here at Spy Talk is how Fat Leonard made a mockery of the fabled NCIS, which everyone loves on television, but in your telling, in this book, they are an entirely corrupt institution. Maybe not entirely, but in this case, Fat Leonard infiltrated them. So tell us how he did that.
Yeah, so there certainly was a couple agents who were corrupt, and one in particular, whose name was John Béliveau, who was prosecuted and served a long time in federal prison on corruption and bribery charges. And he had taken prostitutes, meals, other fake cash from Leonard Francis to essentially feed him law enforcement files. So every time the NCIS would open up a criminal investigation into Leonard Francis's maritime services company, Glen Defense Marine Asia, Béliveau would tip Leonard off, would give him the internal law enforcement files. He would read them, he would text them, he would send them on secure links. So Leonard was always a step ahead of the agents who were trying to investigate him for fraud. Although really the incompetence on NCIS went back much farther. What I was able to find out in the book was that NCIS had actually opened 27 different criminal investigations and inquiries into Francis's company over a decade and closed every single one of them without taking action. Until the very end, the last couple of cases finally caught up to him. But so essentially for 10 years, NCIS had gotten all sorts of tips and requests and people begging them to investigate Leonard Francis for fraud. And it just would close up the cases. It would do a perfunctory inquiry, and that was it. And Leonard would frankly just run circles around them.
Amazing. And as you write, just to make sure everyone knows what's at stake here, you write that American embassies in Asia had sophisticated counterintelligence defenses to fend off Chinese, Russian, and North Korean spies, but they were totally fallible when it came to Fat Leonard and his bribes. Did anyone in NCIS think, gee, maybe this guy is not just a sleazeball he seems to be, but he could be acting on foreign interests, say Chinese intelligence?
Yeah, so not till the very end of the investigation, till right before Leonard Francis was arrested in 2013, NCIS finally was getting wise to what he was doing and how many people, it was just starting to get an inkling of how many people in the Navy were on his payroll, that he had an NCIS agent on his payroll, and they were shocked by this. So in the spring of 2013, they obtained some search warrants. They got approved by a federal magistrate to search Leonard's email addresses and this rogue NCIS agent, John Béliveau, his email addresses. And what they found was that Leonard had been obtaining classified information, not from the NCIS agent, but from Navy officers who were giving him classified ship schedules for the 7th Fleet in Asia. And so at that point, it wasn't just a fraud investigation anymore. It was a counterintelligence investigation. And NCIS and the Justice Department flipped out because, as you said, they didn't know what Leonard was doing with that classified intelligence. They didn't know who he was giving it to. But certainly Leonard was a Malaysian citizen. His business was based in Singapore, and that's information he easily could have sold or bartered. And it took them some time to dig into that, but it was very alarming because it was an open, it was a leak that it turned out had gone on for more than 7 years, where Leonard had been acquiring classified information from 10 U.S. Navy officers over a period of several years. So, but it took NCIS a long time to piece together just how bad this ongoing leak was.
It's just astounding. You know, and anyone who knows anything about, you know, the military would know that troop movements, the divulging of troop movements is about the biggest crime you can commit in the espionage handbook. And yet all these admirals and the NCIS, the doorkeepers themselves, NCIS, were giving away the movement of ships. What's to someone who's not so familiar with all this, what's the impact and import of that?
Well, just one slight correction. There weren't any admirals who were leaking classified information. These were mostly captains, commanders, you know, mid-ranked officers. But still, the damage is, the potential damage is the same. They're giving Leonard Francis essentially troop movements, ship schedules up to a year in advance. So this could easily give the enemy, whether it's China, Russia, North Korea, or a terrorist group, advanced knowledge of where the U.S. Navy planned to send its ships and subs throughout Asia, which is the biggest theater for the Navy around the world. But it wasn't just ship schedules. One officer, a commander named Michael Mishevitz, who had been a commanding officer of a Mm-hmm. He was a destroyer and been on the Sunfleet staff. At one point was leaking Leonard classified information about ballistic missile defenses in Asia, including the U.S. and its allies. So this is very sensitive. It was classified as secret, not top secret, but secret information or confidential information that by definition could be expected to do harm to U.S. national security. In the end, there was no evidence that Leonard sold or gave away any of this classified information. But, you know, as NCIS later found out, Leonard was, after his arrest, he was open about the fact that he didn't exactly keep this stuff very secure. He kept it unprotected on his company servers. He kept printouts of ship schedules lying around his house and desk drawers. But most concerning was the fact that the IT manager for his company, Glen Defense Marine Asia, was a man of Chinese ethnicity in Singapore who was buddies with the Chinese defense attaché in Singapore and liked to play golf with Chinese military officials. Mm. So, you know, that's the kind of thing, as I write, that, you know, gave nightmares, night terrors to NCIS and the Justice Department once they learned the vulnerability of this information.
Yeah, it's just extraordinary. Your chin drops almost on every other page as you read through this magnificent book. Go back to Mike how do you pronounce it? Mishewitz,
yeah. So he is
a very interesting guy.
He is a Polish name because he was adopted by a Polish American woman, but he was born in Cambodia. And at a young age, around age five, this American service member adopted him. Essentially, his family, his birth family, was begging her to take him from Cambodia before the Khmer Rouge could take over the capital. So it's this very originally heartwarming story. He grew up in Illinois. He went to the Naval Academy. He was a high rising naval officer. And in 2010, he made this triumphant return to his country of Cambodia, his country of his birth, as the skipper of the USS Mustin, a destroyer. And this was an event that the Navy, as you might expect, played it to the hilt in terms of public relations, saying that only in America mm-hmm. could you have an immigrant child grow up to be a ship captain of the most powerful Navy in the world and return to a country that had gone through genocide like that. So this was a guy who was he had been selected for captain. He was probably on his way to flag rank, to admiral. And yet even he succumbed to Leonard Francis's temptations. Leonard was a master at identifying people's weaknesses and vices, and he discovered that his marriage was under strain, that he needed money, that he liked prostitutes, and soon Leonard had him on the hook, and Mishewitz was feeding him classified information left and right.
Yeah, he made several trips paid for by Fat Leonard to Cambodia. And a tipster had actually, as you report in your book, a tipster had actually reported his furtive trips to Cambodia.
That's right. And this was a moment that, you know, for NCIS is just a complete embarrassment. So a tipster actually sends a message through the hotline, the online website or hotline to NCIS saying, hey, the Navy commander has been taking some suspicious trips to Cambodia. I think he might be leaking classified information. Now, it wasn't entirely on the mark. He was going to Cambodia, but he wasn't leaking military secrets to the Cambodians, but he was giving them to Leonard Francis. And NCIS did this very perfunctory inquiry. It went and talked to Mishewitz and his wife, with whom he had been feuding, and checked his cell phone records and found all these suspicious repeated contacts with foreigners, which was to Mishewitz's girlfriend. Mishewitz's wife mentioned that he had been hanging out with this sketchy contractor named Leonard Francis, and yet NCIS closed the case. It said, oh, well, we think he's just having problems with his wife. There's no issue here, when in fact Mishewitz had been giving military secrets to Leonard. And at that point forward, Mishewitz felt kind of invulnerable. I think, you know, you would think most people on a close call like that would cover their tracks and not do it again. But if anything, it emboldened Mishewitz to keep giving Leonard more and more classified information. And again, this was a moment NCIS could have and should have nipped this in the bud a couple years before Francis was arrested. And they, you know, it had been handed to them on a silver platter what was going on, and they ignored it.
And it seems to me, I mean, it was so well known that Leonard was bribing so many Navy officials that, you know, it's entirely possible that Chinese agents, Chinese espionage, North Koreans, whomever, Russians, whoever, would have picked up on this and been able to blackmail Leonard into sharing that information. So do we know, does the Navy know the depths to which the damage was done, that it was possibly, this information was possibly passed along to opposition forces?
Well, that's a really good question, and frankly, an obvious question, right? You know, did the Navy look into this? Did it do any kind of counterintelligence analysis and deep dive into, you know, a damage assessment? But if they did, they've never disclosed it. And, you know, when I asked in my interviews, I could never get a straight answer. You know, there's I came across no evidence that they had done this except to sort of conduct interviews, talk to Leonard, and I think, frankly, crossed their fingers and held their breath and hoped that the Chinese didn't get it. But if there was any sort of damage assessment done, they kept it under wraps.
Well, that's astounding in several ways that we don't know. And, you know, your credentials as an investigative reporter have been established for can I say, decades. You're reporting on Afghanistan. You get people to talk to you. And it's astounding, your facility for doing that. And it seems to me, if they had conducted a counterintelligence investigation to investigate whether foreign intelligence services had capitalized on these indiscretions, you would know that.
I would, I think, have come across some inkling of it. It wasn't just interviewing people, although it is important to note that in this book, everybody who's quoted is on the record, and all the quotations and material comes from documents, investigative files. I was able to obtain several terabytes of data, the law enforcement files from NCIS, the Defense Criminal Investigative Service, and the Justice Department. So I have a pretty good handle on the scope and detail of this investigation. And while there certainly was alarm about the leaks of military secrets and NCIS and DCIS trying to find out, you know, where it went, how frequently it happened, you know, and they certainly asked Leonard this question about, well, how friendly were you with the Chinese government? And, you know, there were some contacts there, and Leonard denied selling any of it. But in terms of any damage assessment, you know, the record is silent on that. So I've got to assume they didn't do something, although it's kind of hard to reconcile that with the obvious need to do one. But I do think one explanation is this was already so embarrassing for NCIS and for the Navy. The fact that you had 10 U.S. Navy officers leak military secrets to a Malaysian foreign national over a period of 7 years is got to be one of the most embarrassing counterintelligence failures for the Navy in its history. This wasn't just one instance where somebody hacked into something. Leonard cultivated 10 different individuals in U.S. Navy uniforms to leak him classified information on a regular and sustained basis. That's just, it's kind of mind-blowing. And to this day, the Navy has not acknowledged the extent of it publicly.
Wow. And the FBI?
FBI had no involvement, as far as we know. This was NCIS. You know, one of their missions is counterintelligence, and they work with DCIS and the Justice Department, but FBI did not get involved.
DCIS is Defense Criminal Investigation Services, or Pentagon's police or counterintelligence agency. But, you know, the book is filled with these compelling and ultimately sad, or alternately sad and enraging personal stories. Let's talk about one of them, Vice Admiral Mike Miller. You describe how he eventually ended up as superintendent of the U.S. Naval Academy, and in his farewell ceremony, Navy Secretary Ray Mabus said the service could not have picked a better leader to mold the character of the next generation of officers. Quote, his vision here in Annapolis went far beyond brick and mortar and academics. The moral, mental, and ethical development of our future leaders is also central to his legacy. And then you write, as a three-star admiral, Miller played by a different set of rules. He used his clout and connections to fight back and resist accountability, making a mockery of the Academy honor concept. You know, accountability, or the lack of accountability, is a thread that goes all through your book on the Afghanistan papers and lack of accountability in Afghanistan. Here we have more, even you might say more blatant examples, although not with the consequences of getting people killed. But tell us about how Vice Admiral Mike Miller fell into the embrace of Leonard.
Well, if I get back up, you set that scene really well. It is change of command ceremony in 2014. He's supposed to be stepping down as a superintendent after this long, glorious career. The Navy secretary, all these other VIPs show up to sing his praises. And, you know, but what neither Admiral Miller nor Secretary Mabus disclosed was that a few days before, Miller had received a visit in his office from two federal agents, mm-hmm. one from an NCIS agent, another from DCIS, who were there to ask him about Fat Leonard and these over-the-top lavish gifts he had received years earlier when Miller was the commanding officer of the USS Ronald Reagan Carrier Strike Group. And during a deployment to the Western Pacific in 2006, Miller had reached out to Leonard. So he was the one who initiated the contact in advance of port visits to Singapore and Kuala Lumpur and Hong Kong, and said, you know, essentially wanted to take advantage of Leonard's hospitality. He asked Leonard to help do some furniture shopping for him, to set up some dinners. And so Leonard, you know, took the cue and set up these, you know, dinners that cost several hundred dollars a person for Miller and his command staff. And, you know, Miller was living the high life. And beyond that, then when Miller became superintendent of the Naval Academy, Leonard wanted to get invited to the change of command ceremony for the chief of naval operations, the highest ranking admiral in the Navy. And Miller invited Leonard to his quarters, his residence, and the yard at the Naval Academy, gave him a tour, arranged a tour of John Paul Jones's crypt. So they were very, very chummy. And NCIS wanted to ask him about this, about these gifts. Were they bribes? What was going on? And the contrast I draw in the book is that Miller had gotten wind that he was under investigation, and he hired a hotshot lawyer, defense lawyer named Louis Freed.
That, you know, I got to say that this is another really disappointing anecdote about Louis Freed's business activities, his lawyering activities since he left the FBI. I mean, here's the head of the FBI. I mean, everyone's due a lawyer, right? But lawyers are also free to decline to represent certain candidates. And here you have a corruption at the highest levels of the Navy. And who shows up? And in the way you write it, it's a great scene. Louis Free tries to steamroll this NCIS agent, but this wasn't the first rodeo, as we say, for this NCIS agent. So Jerry Crosby was his name, and he barked back at Louis Free as well as he should have. But here's another point that needs underscoring about the story, the sad story of Mike Miller, is that he sought out Fat Leonard because Leonard was widely known across the naval hierarchy as, this is the guy you want to know. You know, you want sex, booze, golf, you know, five-star hotels, whatever you want. He's the go-to guy. So here we have a score or more of Navy officers who sought out or were easily entwined with Fat Leonard. That's a very dispiriting portrait of our Navy.
Well, like you said, word had spread among senior officers, flag officers, that Leonard was the concierge. He was, if you wanted a good time, Mike Miller nicknamed him Mr. Make It Happen. And he told other admirals about this. You know, if you end up in Singapore or Hong Kong, you know, take advantage of Leonard Francis. He's Mr. Make It Happen. You know, he can set up a dinner. He can set up a good time. You name it. But again, the irony with Admiral Miller is he superintended the Naval Academy when he's being questioned by federal agents. You know, he's told he's the subject of a criminal investigation. It's pretty serious, right?
Mm.
And yet I obtained the transcript of his interview, and federal agents had secretly recorded this. You know, Louis Freeh and Miller didn't know that they were being secretly recorded, which is, again, is pretty stunning. Of federal agents secretly record an interview with a three-star admiral
and the forward director of the FBI.
And Miller is just, you know, he's not being forthcoming on this interview. You know, he's forgetful. I don't recall. He said, I don't recall, or I can't remember more than three dozen times. Louis Freeh is kind of trying to bully the agents into saying, look, my client did nothing wrong. He reimbursed Leonard partially for some of these gifts. You know, here's his checks. And, you know, he's being very aggressive about it. But the point I'm trying to make in the book, in that chapter, is that if this had been a midshipman at the Naval Academy,
mm-hmm.
there would have been no mercy for the kind of responses Admiral Miller gave. He would have been kicked out and forced to repay his tuition. But here he is, the superintendent, the guy who's supposed to be setting the example, who's being lauded for grooming the, you know, for raising the next generation of Navy leaders, in behaving this, you know, appalling manner. And in the end, he's officially censured by the Navy, by Secretary Ray Mabus, for his appalling behavior when he was commander of the Reagan strike group. You know, but he's lucky. He wasn't indicted. He wasn't charged. It was an official censure. So it's a knock on his reputation. But in terms of legal liability, it's really a slap on the wrist.
Really, and God knows the cost of this corruption. Again, I go back to NCIS and how it was neutered by Leonard. You describe one anecdote, or you tell an anecdote. In 2006, a lieutenant reported on Leonard's overcharges in Hong Kong to an NCIS agent who buried it. If you rock the boat, you got squashed.
Well, and Leonard had, the reason he was able, this didn't happen coincidentally. Leonard had moles embedded throughout the Navy bureaucracy. He had moles in NCIS. He had a lot of moles at the 7th Fleet, on the 7th Fleet staff aboard the USS Blue Ridge, the flagship for the 7th Fleet. He had moles embedded in the contracting office in Singapore. He had moles embedded at Pacific Fleet, including the public affairs director for
Amazing.
Pacific Fleet was literally on Leonard's payroll, advising him how to deal with admirals.
And so, none of this was a secret. I mean, this is well known that he had a network, lattice work.
He was very good at compartmentalizing. So not everyone who was on the take knew, was aware of what somebody else was doing. Leonard was like this puppet master. He had people all over. He had people at the U.S. Naval Base in Yokosuka. You know, so he had people constantly feeding him information. And one of the ironies is they called him boss, right?
Mm-hmm.
And emails and text messages, you know, they were very subservient to Leonard. They treated him like an admiral. They, you know, yes, sir. Yes, boss. What can I get you, boss? And he would demand military secrets. He would demand information about, you know, where's the admiral going next? You know, sensitive inside information about contracts, but you know, it's just shocking that to read these contemporaneous documents, these emails and text messages where, you know, people who had sworn an oath to the Constitution, who are supposed to be, you know, doing public service to their country, they're really answering to this Malaysian crook who's defrauding the U.S. government and calling him boss. And it's just kind of, even after reporting on this for so many years, it still blows my mind that the subservience of it all.
And as you know, they not only swore an oath, but you get constant security reminders. As you know, I did a stint in Army intelligence during the Vietnam War. One day I went to lunch from my safe. I was undercover and I worked out of a safe house in Da Nang. And I went to lunch. I left out a file and somebody saw that I had left a file out, a class of classified information, and boy, did I get reamed out. I almost lost my job over it. It was, and you get, I mean, even in when I was posted at the intelligence school, they warned us about a certain bar that the KGB was known to frequent to try to entrap or elicit information from Army intelligence faculty and students. So you get these constant reminders, and the idea that they just ignore these, you know, you write from experience, Francis knew that NCIS didn't take fraud or corruption seriously. Well, if the guardians aren't taking security seriously, it really makes you wonder.
Well, I'll give you this one classic story of Leonard Francis getting his hands on classified information. He wasn't subtle about it.
It
wasn't hard. It wasn't these dead drops, you know, where somebody's leaving something under the park bench. One of the first occasions Leonard got classified ship schedules, he essentially made an appointment to go to the Navy base in Yokosuka, Japan. And he had one of his moles who he'd taken to dinners and given other gifts, meet him at the front gate, right? Leonard rolls up in a BMW with a driver. He goes to the gate. His mole, who's a chief warrant officer on the Admiral staff, you know, escorts him through security, takes him to the flagship, the USS Blue Ridge, walks him around the ship, hands him a couple of computer disks with the classified ship schedules on it. And then Leonard just waltzes right back out the front gate. And the next day, the chief warrant officer emails him, you know, here you go, boss, you know, happy to help anytime, right? I mean, it was just like, it had to be the easiest theft of U.S. military secrets in history. These guys were literally opening the door for Leonard Francis and escorting him on the flagship. He didn't have to break a sweat. And
right.
To me, again, it's like, what you think, what were these people thinking? But Leonard was very, very clever. He was very cunning. He slowly reeled them in, built their trust, you know, made them think that this was okay, that he was a husbanding contractor who was supposed to help Navy ships. So he made them believe that, you know, this was only helping the U.S. Navy to give Leonard the ship schedules. This made the service better. And people just kind of put their common sense to the side because they were, frankly, blinded by his gifts and bribes and rationalized to themselves that this was okay. But again, he didn't have to break much of a sweat doing this. It was out in the open.
Well, as you describe him, he had the skill set of a master spy. But his marks came so cheaply. That's what strikes me. I mean, if this was just a case of one or two admirals or captains, it would be pretty disturbing. But this is, you know, a large number across the top of the Navy's leadership in Asia, in any event. And we still may not know, because we don't know how deep the counterintelligence investigation went. We still may not know. We may never know publicly, because the Navy would have an interest in covering it up, that they were penetrated by Chinese intelligence through this operation, or North Korean or whatever. I guess my last question is, geez, has the Navy learned anything from this?
I think the Navy, the only lesson they learned is they drew it from the Tailhook scandal in the early 90s, you know, that this resulted in congressional investigations, public hearings. You know, a lot of admirals saw their careers end. The Navy secretary got fired. And so a lot of the senior leadership, the Navy, had been through that or observed it or heard about it. So when the Leonard Francis scandal came along, the lesson they learned was, we're not going to be public about this. We're not going to be transparent about this. There were no congressional hearings. They would always tell Congress that, well, that matter is under criminal investigation by the Justice Department. And we can't possibly comment on a pending investigation.
Outrageous.
Navy Secretary Ray Mabus had exactly one press conference where he addressed some questions a few months after Leonard Francis was arrested. But ever since, the Navy has really, you know, clamped down in an extraordinary way, swept the outcomes of their disciplinary investigations under the rug. And there has been no lessons learned, no, you know, nothing of that sort to sort of, you know, after action report to say, what lessons can we learn from this? How can we make sure this doesn't happen again? I think it was so embarrassing. And there were so many senior officers. As I report in the book, there were 91 admirals who were questioned or investigated in this. Only one went to jail, but I think they realized that if it's a Pandora's box, that if you start acknowledging the problem, and by the time you get to the bottom of it, it's going to be so bad that this perhaps was more than the Navy could stand.
Only one went to jail of the 91.
That's right.
Who were implicated in one degree or another. What about NCIS?
So one NCIS agent, this rogue agent, John Beliveau, he did go to jail for several years, and he pleaded guilty to taking bribes from Leonard Francis. There was another NCIS agent who was investigated for, Leonard claimed he took him to bars, gave him prostitutes in exchange. This guy had given him advance information on ship movements. So it was unclear if it was classified or not, but he was quietly forced to retire. He was demoted, forced to retire from NCIS. But NCIS to this day has not publicly acknowledged that this second agent was ever investigated. That's only something I found out through the documents I obtained. So, you know, but NCIS, no, there was no
house cleaning,
the bottom review of how this could have happened. I think they were so consumed with doing the investigation that they left it at that.
Mm. So no house cleaning that we know of.
No.
Boy, this is a record of a lack of accountability that sets new records for lack of accountability, I should say. It's very, very disturbing. I got to tell listeners that your book builds thematically with the momentum of a great crime or espionage thriller, and I don't want to give away how they got him. And then they didn't, but how they finally closed in on Fat Leonard and put him away, at least temporarily, because it's just a great story, so beautifully written and disturbing at the same time, like a great crime thriller should be. So anyway, thanks so much, Craig, for coming on the show. I'm happy to see the attention this book is getting, but it should get more. And not just because of Fat Leonard. All the stories seem to, you know, focus on Fat Leonard rather than where the focus, in my mind, at least the secondary focus, should be on what's going on at NCIS. This, you know, this service which legends and mythology are spread week after week in this TV show. But we know from the Fat Leonard cases that the reality is far different.
No question. I have to tell you one quick story about NCIS. I would file all these Freedom of Information requests with NCIS for the records on the case, what happened to the officers under investigation. They would slow roll them for months or years, and they finally, a Navy lawyer said, no more FOIA requests from you. We're just not even going to bother with it. But in the meantime, their FOIA office is busy reviewing scripts for NCIS, the TV show. So that gives you a sense of their priorities. It was, you know,
Good Lord.
The case files with this massively important public investigation get buried, but the NCIS scripts are most important.
NCIS is good at deception operations, you might say.
They are good at that.
Well, we'll have to leave it at that, Craig Whitlock. Everybody should go out and buy, who has a minimal interest, should go out and buy this book, Fat Leonard. It's an extraordinary story and disturbing. And I hope something good comes out of it.
Well, thanks, Jeff. It was a pleasure talking to you, and I appreciate you having me on again.
Pleasure. Thank you. And that's it for this week's Spy Talk. Be sure to check out our complete podcast archive on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you haven't, do check out the Spy Talk news site on Substack, where we offer a steady diet of scoops and original analyses on the intersection of intelligence, foreign policy, and military operations. Just Google Spy Talk and you'll quickly find your way there. This edition of the Spy Talk podcast was smoothly produced, as always, by Kanai, and edited by Molly Hawkey for MSW Media. Well, that's it. See you around. I'm Jeff Stein.
For more original reporting and insights like this, subscribe to spytalk.co on Substack and follow us on Twitter at @talk_spy. If you enjoyed our podcast, subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MSW Media.
History is messy. It's weird, wild, and anything but boring. Rainy Day Rabbit Holes is a history podcast about unhinged stories that make you stop and ask, wait, is this real life?
From crazy disasters and tasty scandals to enlightening and surprising heartwarming tales, we explore the moments where people behave badly and sometimes beautifully.
We've got naughty politicians, cultural chaos, and a deep love for the Pacific Northwest, including Bigfoot.
It's thoughtful, irreverent, occasionally serious, and always entertaining.
Let's fall down the rabbit hole.
MSW Media.